Hello and welcome to Hacks and Jacks. It's another edition here on May 11th. It's Mother's Day Sunday. My name's Brett Ford. You can find me at Fade That Man on social media. Scott Chu, unfortunately, is unavailable this evening. He's on the 10-day IL with a little bit of an illness. Well, maybe not 10-day IL. He should be back next week, so maybe we'll refer to him as day-to-day. So we'll run through this Hacks and Jacks podcast the best we can. We've got news and notes as usual, and then we'll jump into the latest update of Scott's top 150 hitters list. Scott updated that on May 7th. We've got risers, we've got fallers, and I'm going to do my best to talk you through Scott's reasoning as well as kind of my personal opinions as well. So here we go. News and notes from this week. We've got some managerial transactions. The Rangers have hired Brett Boone as their new hitting coach. Before Boone was hired, the Rangers had scored three or fewer runs in nine of their 10 games leading up to the change. But they've averaged 5 runs per game since Boone was hired. That's 35 runs scored in 7 games. Not sure if it's correlation or causation, but at least the offense looks better in Texas. Now, the Rangers, who were mired in a losing streak, won their first game without their old hitting coach on Sunday and have since gone 4-3, so at least that's an improvement. We'll see if the bats can continue to heat up. Like I said, they've improved from scoring, you know, 3 or fewer in 9 of 10 games leading up to the change, and now they're averaging 5 runs per game, including outputs of 8, 10, 6, and 6. So we'll see if they get better. They get the Rockies. You know, Rocky Road always helps. So they've got a 7-game homestand against the Rockies and Astros this week. We'll see if they can keep the bats hot with Brett Boone as their hitting coach. And a couple of managerial changes. Pirates have fired head coach Derek Shelton after their slow start. Somehow GM Ben Cherington is still at the helm in Pittsburgh. They'll be moving forward with a new manager. So will the Colorado Rockies. Colorado fired head coach Bud Black after he began the season 7-33. Was he supposed to do better? Ryan McMahon is your franchise player. No disrespect meant to the Rockies' third baseman, but you know, there's not much to work with there in Colorado. But I guess 7 wins out of 40 games was the breaking point. So the Rockies will move on, and we'll see if they can do better with a new manager in the dugout. Well, we've had several players suffer injuries this week, and a handful come back from injury. We'll go over some IL transactions now. The Los Angeles Dodgers outfielder Teoscar Hernandez went to the IL. He suffered from a groin strain, and that's opened up some opportunity for a couple of guys in L.A. Andy Pages has been the one who has paid the most dividends for the Dodgers. Pages has been an everyday player since Teoscar went down, and not only has he been an everyday player, he's moved up the lineup. He batted 2nd, 4th, 5th, 4th again, so he's been up in the upper half of the lineup for the past 4 games, and not only has he gotten increased opportunity, he's also produced with it. Pages has been excellent since moving up the lineup. He's 9-27 with 2 doubles, a triple, 5 RBI, 5 runs scored, and a stolen base. That's all this week with Teoscar being down. So Andy Pages, not to spoil anything for later in the episode, but he's made a huge leap in Scott's rankings, jumping up to tier 10, ranked 109. He's up 26 spots this week. So a huge opportunity for Pages to cement his spot in the Dodgers outfield, and he's done just that. Houston DH Yordan Alvarez has gone to the IL as well, and with Alvarez vacating the designated hitter spot in Houston, that's made way for several different hitters to take over. They've kind of rotated that DH spot between Brendan Rodgers, Yiner Diaz, Jose Altuve has gotten some DH duties, kind of letting other guys play left field, which isn't the worst thing for the Astros. Even Victor Caratini's getting some DH at-bats this week, but I think the guy who's really benefited the most from this has been Zach DiCenzo, the Houston Astros outfielder. DiCenzo has kind of assumed a full-time role since Alvarez has gone down, and you know, he's taken advantage of it. The past 3 weeks, you know, he's been hot. He's getting more at bats. You know, he's gone from maybe a game or two a week to really 5 or 6 games per week over the past 2 weeks. You know, 14 for 45 from the plate. So, you know, some simple math tells us that's right around 300. He's got a home run and 7 RBI, as well as a stolen base. So he can contribute across the board and might be a sneaky streaming name for those looking for outfielders, especially in deeper leagues. Only leagues he's probably already taken because, you know, only league guys are sharp. I mean, Scott Chu's an only league guy. He's pretty darn sharp. But DiCenzo, Zach DiCenzo, Houston outfielder, might be a name to keep an eye on this week, or at least until Yordan Alvarez gets back from his injury. Milwaukee Brewers catcher William Contreras will not be going on the IL, at least immediately. He's playing through a broken finger on his left hand. Something to watch. There's been reports that he's not gripping the bat quite as well, and we've seen that in some of his at-bats recently, where he's lost the grip and thrown the bat halfway down the line. So keep an eye on that. If Contreras' production dips, there may be cause for concern. Maybe pick up a streaming catcher. Of course, it's William Contreras. He's a top catching option, and you know, it's not like he's sitting out. If he starts to miss time, they start going to Eric Haas, the Brewers, that is, start going to Eric Haas more behind the plate, and Contreras' plate appearances reduce. Maybe it might be feasible to plug in a streaming catcher and put Contreras on your bench, even if the Brewers don't send him to the IL. But, you know, if you drafted Contreras, you're rolling with him regardless. So just keep an eye on that. And if it gets worse and they do send him to the IL, be ready. Have names on your watch list at catcher to maybe fill that void. Noelvi Marte was sent to the IL. Cincinnati third baseman Noelvi Marte, he had a hot bat, you know, the past couple weeks. He was doing well and then suffered an injury that really opened the door for Santiago Espinal. Probably not fantasy relevant. He is getting at bats at third base pretty much every day for the Reds, but really not a tremendous bat. Maybe in deep or only leagues might help in batting average or on base percentage, maybe, but really nothing exciting there. You know, otherwise with the Reds, Austin Hayes and Will Benson are both with the team now as of Friday. Hayes returning from an injury and Benson called up from AAA. Hayes is batting fourth behind Ellie De La Cruz and will continue to provide lineup protection for the Reds shortstop. And as we know, or as we've talked about, Scott and I have both mentioned how streaky Hayes can be, you know, especially in Great American Ballpark. If he heats up, you know, as the summer, the humidity climbs, you know, he can put 3-4 home runs out in 1 week. But the matchups have to be right. You know, when he faces a lefty, he's playable. If he's, you know, facing 6 right-handed starters in a week, he's probably replacement level. So just be aware that Hayes is there. Benson, a lefty, can provide some power and speed, but he's probably going to tank your batting average. He's below replacement level in most leagues. I would say 12 to 15 team leagues, you can do better off the waiver wire. But Will Benson in Cincinnati, he's an option. Not the best option, but he's an option. The Reds also traded for Connor Joe to add to their outfield depth. Joe had been with the San Diego Padres. He comes over in a trade for a minor league pitcher and some cash consideration. So I think the Reds were just looking for some right-handed depth off their bench. Not sure what that means for, you know, Rhys Hines, who was also called up this week. Maybe that shows that they don't necessarily trust Hines, who popped for a week when he came up originally last year. You know, he hit about 17 home runs in 4 games. That's hyperbole. I know it was less than that. But Hines was outstanding for about 2 weeks, was a very hot name on the waiver wire, and then fizzled out very quickly. So perhaps that's what the Reds are seeing again this year in acquiring Joe and bolstering their outfield depth. All that to say that Noelvi Marte is on the IL and Santiago Espinal is not fantasy relevant. And the last injury note this week as far as players who may or may not go on the IL, Jose Altuve, Houston infielder and I guess outfielder now, left today's game with, let me track down what that was. Find me Altuve. Altuve exited the game with right hamstring tightness, and that was on Sunday, or rather Saturday night. No news yet as of Sunday night that we're recording, but we'll be keeping an eye on that. Jose Altuve for the Astros. If he goes down, that'd be really their two best hitters on the IL with Altuve and Alvarez both out. Perhaps, you know, not that this is a pitching podcast or anything, but yeah, if you have pitchers going against the Astros, that's Kansas City Royals starters or Texas Rangers starters later in the week. They might not be a bad team to target, especially if Altuve goes on the injured list. Who's back from the injured list this week? Seattle utility man Dylan Moore is back from the injured list. He ranks number 135 in Scott's hitter list, previously unranked because of injury, but he's there in tier 12, floating right around Trent Grisham, Jackson Holliday, down near Xander Bogaerts, who has fallen quite a bit, above J.P. Crawford. Dylan Moore, his appeal lies, I think, primarily with his position eligibility, but he's been hot. Listen, he's been hot. He's got speed. He will provide stolen bases, as Scott and I have talked about previously. He has had some pop. You know, he's shown some power early in the season, but that's not exactly a sustainable skill that we've seen. Six home runs and seven stolen bases in just under 100 plate appearances so far this season with a 280 average. The good news is that the strikeout rate is down. The walk rate is also down. The home run to fly ball rate is at an unsustainable 40%. Okay, we're not going to see Dylan Moore crush six home runs in every 100 plate appearances. His 298 BABIP is the highest since 2022. It's led to a 280 batting average. That 280 batting average, a career high. His expected batting average, 25 points less at 256. So, you know, take it with a grain of salt. Dylan Moore probably due for some regression, but hey, man, ride him while he's hot. Like I said, six home runs and seven stolen bases. We'll hope that this little stint on the injured list doesn't derail him and he can keep it going as he comes back from injury. San Diego Padres outfielder Jackson Merrill is back from injury as well. Jackson Merrill, he's a dog. He's ranked 30th in Scott's hitter list after being omitted for the past couple weeks due to injury. But he comes right back in tier four, surrounded by Seiya Suzuki, Riley Green, Wyatt Langford, you know, that upper echelon tier of outfielders. Merrill has been outstanding in just under 60 plate appearances, four home runs, a 420 batting average, absolutely ridiculous, 392 expected average, so it's not like he's cheating anybody here. He's got a 488 BABIP. It's just silly. An 87% zone contact rate. I don't have to tell you guys to start Jackson Merrill. He's a stud. Get him everywhere you can and keep him in your lineup and hope he stays healthy for the next 10 years because he's going to be really fun to watch play baseball. Now, we talked about Cincinnati outfielder Austin Hayes coming back, also coming back from the IL this week, Baltimore outfielder Tyler O'Neill, New York Mets outfielder Jesse Winker, and Los Angeles Angels infielder Yoan Moncada. You know, all four of those guys coming back from the injured list this week, you know, varying levels of fantasy relevance. O'Neill and Hayes probably the most relevant, followed by Winker, and then Moncada bringing up the caboose there, although Moncada's third base eligibility makes him a little more palatable at such a shallow position. So maybe if he can show flashes of his, you know, rookie season where he was actually good at baseball, and not the guy who's just been plagued by injury the past couple years, maybe we'll see something out of him, but my expectations are not very high. We'll take a quick break, and when we get back, we'll talk about a handful of names who have been called up to the majors this week, and then get into Scott's top 150 hitter list. We're back with more Hacks and Jacks, and we're talking about a couple of guys who got called up to the majors this week. We've got Los Angeles Dodgers outfielder James Outman, Texas outfielder Evan Carter, New York Mets infielder Brett Beatty, Chicago White Sox first baseman Tim Elko and Atlanta outfielder Luke Williams. Now, of those five names, we've talked about Beatty before on a couple episodes, especially pre-draft. You know, Scott was a little bit excited about him, and I think that excitement remains, especially, you know, with him being third base and second base eligible. But before fantasy managers buy in, we really need to see him get that consistent playing time, start to beat out Luis Angel Acuna for playing time, you know, beat out Jeff McNeil, and really see some consistent games either at third base, second base, DH, wherever the Mets can put him. I don't think he's going to beat out Mark Vientos for any at-bats, certainly, but they could move Vientos to DH, so who knows. But until Beatty gets those regular at-bats, I'm certainly not in. Evan Carter's an interesting name. Carter was really, really good in a short sample a couple years ago, batting .306 over 75 plate appearances in 23 games in 2023, kind of leading the Rangers' surge into the playoffs. But last year, things just spun on their heads, and he was not good. 188 batting average, 272 OBP. The slugging was down. The zone contact was down. The walk rate was down. The home run to fly ball rate was down. The BABIP was super low. The barrel rate was reduced. Everything that could have gone wrong for him did. And reports are now coming out that a lot of it was linked to kind of a lingering back injury. So perhaps he has a clean slate this year. Perhaps he has a clean bill of health. He was called up to the Rangers big league team here and has played some outfield with Texas. And the timing is good. Brett Boone's there now. So the lineup's kind of getting turned around. So I don't know if that's what they were waiting for or if it just worked out that, you know, Leody Taveras gets DFA'd and we're making room for Evan Carter. So in 17 plate appearances so far this season, he's batting .235 with a home run. Super small sample, so we really can't judge anything off of this, right? But I will say that I am at least interested to watch what Evan Carter does. I'm hoping, as a baseball fan, that the drop in performance in 2024 was more due to injury than anything else. But he's a guy that I'm watching. He's really got to prove it to me before I, you know, make any bids in Fab or pick him up in any of my leagues. I need to see it first. He's a show me kind of guy. Because if he's anything like he was last year, it's below replacement level, it's non-rosterable. But if he's the guy he was in 2023 over, granted, a super small sample, 75 plate appearances, he could be a top 100 fantasy bat, you know, top 20 fantasy outfielder, the way he was drafted in the 2024 draft season, when everybody thought, oh, an Evan Carter breakout is coming. He could be that guy. He could be just a huge post-hype sleeper. But I need to see it first. I need to see signs of life. The zone contact has been really high. The zone contact is great. The strikeout rate dropped, you know, from 32 to 26 last year in 160 plate appearances. So, like, I'm encouraged by some of these numbers, but I need to see the production at the major league level before I can buy in. And really, he wasn't hitting that well in the minors before he got called up. So who really knows what we're going to get with Evan Carter? It's a wait-and-see situation. The other guys that I mentioned, Elko, Williams, and Outman, really aren't fantasy relevant. Outman could be if he produced, but he's just not. So we'll see what happens with those three. Elko's interesting. He's got a lot of power. Not sure if it's not like Nick Kurtz type of power. Of course, Nick Kurtz power, he hasn't hit a home run yet, in 2 weeks of being in the bigs. So still waiting on that. That doesn't sound like a frustrated fantasy manager, does it? I do have shares of Nick Kurtz, and I'm still mad that he hasn't hit one out yet. So, I do have to check box scores today to see if he did, but I'm still waiting on you, Nick Kurtz. But anyway, Elko could possibly, you know, hit the ball out of the stadium. He's got to make contact first. He's got a 30% strikeout rate pretty much across the board at every level in the minors. So we'll see if he can hit major league pitching. If he does, the ball's going to go a long way. But he reminds me a lot of Joey Gallo. We'll be right back with more Hacks and Jacks. When we get back from break, we'll dive into Scott's top 150 hitters list. I'm going to do my best Scott Chu impression and take you through the risers and the fallers after this break. Welcome back to Hacks and Jacks. I'm Brett Ford at Fade That Man on social media. I am not joined by Scott Chu today. Scott's under the weather. If the shoe fits on social media, that's if the CHU fits Scott Chu on social media. Scott every week puts out the top 150 hitters list. If you don't know, I don't know how you stumbled across this podcast at this point in the season, but if you haven't been reading that, you need to be reading that. Scott does a great job of profiling. He does a great job of not getting too high on the hot streaks, not getting too low in the slumps, unless, you know, unless these hitters are just performing so badly that they're below replacement level. And we talk about replacement level a lot. You know, keep that in mind in your league. It varies league to league. 10-team leagues, replacement level are much different than 15-team league replacement level. And that's obvious, right? But, you know, sometimes we miss the forest for the trees when we're looking at these fantasy players and who's hot and who needs to be rostered and who doesn't. So let's dive right into the most recent update of Scott's top 150 hitters list. Let's talk about some risers. We'll start with O'Neill Cruz, the Pittsburgh Pirates shortstop turned outfielder, is in tier three this week. He's ranked number 18. He's up five spots. Now, granted, that doesn't sound like a huge leap, but the thing with Cruz that Scott is most excited about, that excites me as a fantasy manager as well, is that he's raising his floor. The ceiling was already miles high, right? Like the 30-30 ceiling is definitely still there, of course, but he's raising his floor with plate discipline and decision-making. And Scott does a great job of illustrating that point. He still makes crazy hard contact. He's still an absolute freak athlete. But the way Scott puts it, you know, he's walking and making good decisions at the plate. And that's raising his floor. He's going to be less streaky. He's going to produce more during those cold spells. And he's going to benefit fantasy managers even more than he has in the past. Now let's get to this week's cover boy. It's Luis Robert Jr. And Scott always talks about how Luis Robert Jr. is the hardest fantasy baseball player to rank, just because he's got all the physical skills that you could ever want, and just doesn't always put it together. But as Scott says in this week's article, it's so much easier to roster Luis Robert Jr., to tolerate Luis Robert Jr.'s cold spells when he's getting on base more consistently. And similar to O'Neill Cruz, Luis Robert Jr. is making a huge, huge improvement with his decision-making at the plate. Scott featured Luis Robert Jr.'s 2025 Decision Value Plus rolling chart. So that kind of factors in all the things that he's doing at the plate with his swing decisions, with his plate discipline, and he's improved so much from mid-April to mid-May. He's gone from below average, like we're talking maybe 35th percentile, all the way up to not only above average, but we're talking like almost 80th percentile in decision value plus. Now, it's not a contact metric. It's a decision-making metric. But if Luis Robert Jr. is making better decisions, that means he's probably swinging at better pitches, which means he's more likely to make better contact, which means that this 186 batting average that he's currently sitting at is bound to improve, bound to find some positive regression and get back up to where it should be. And, you know, whether that's 240, 250, you know, I think it could be higher than that. I think the ceiling is higher than that. But really, the batting average should come up as long as he keeps making these positive decisions. And with this good decision-making at the plate, he's going to get on base. He's going to give you stolen bases because he's running as soon as he gets on the base, because there's no other way for the White Sox to generate runs other than him putting himself in scoring position, right? But the sky's the limit with Luis Robert Jr., and now the floor is starting to come up. And so does his ranking, coincidentally. Funny how the way that works, right? Scott likes him. I like him. And frankly, I'm trying to buy low. Maybe fantasy managers are sick and tired of watching him only hit 186. So maybe it's a buy low opportunity. I certainly think so. We'll move on to the next player. Players really that have climbed their ranks. And that's this first base conglomerate that Scott and I both love at this tier. We're talking tier 7. You know, all three of these first basemen have moved up 10 ranks each this week, and that's New York Yankees first baseman Ben Rice, Detroit Tigers first baseman Spencer Torkelson, and Athletics first baseman Tyler Soderstrom. Now, all three of them started the season at varying levels of hotness. Torque was absolutely amazing. Soderstrom was absolutely amazing. Ben Rice would have been, probably been considered amazing had he not been overshadowed by the other two guys. But really, the thing that has brought them up the ranks, as Scott talks about all the time, is that, you know, the hots are hot, right? But the cold streaks are not as bad as they have been previously, right? They're not bottoming out in ways that they have in previous seasons. And I think that's a lot of due to the fact you're due in testament to, you know, all three of them have very high zone contact percentage ranks. All right. All three of them have shown a really good penchant for hitting the ball when it's in the zone, making contact when it's in the zone, which is what zone contact percentage is. Spencer Torkelson has shown an improved walk rate, nearly doubling his walk rate from last year. And they're, you know, they're still producing, even if it's a reduced rate for the time being. The peaks are super high, while the valleys are not as cavernous as some thought they might be, or as they have been previously. So those guys are going to stay up in the ranks and above replacement level. Like, you know, we should be dropping players to pick these guys up. It's probably too late to grab most of these guys in 10 to 12 team leagues, but you know, these are guys that we need to hang on to for sure. We'll move on to one of the more interesting names in this week's risers, and that's Kansas City Royals third baseman and second baseman Mikel Garcia. He's up to tier 9, spot 96, 20 spots up in Scott's rankings from last week. That's like three straight weeks that Garcia has climbed, and you know, as he should, because his production has been outstanding. Garcia's not a power guy, but this year, the one thing that's been different is that he's making more frequent hard contact. He's increased his barrel rate. He's increased his hard hit rate. He's been absolutely outstanding so far this year, and it's a marked improvement from 2024. You know, he's batting .319. You know, but the question is it sustainable? Right, like that's kind of what we're looking at here. Is can Mikel Garcia continue this production? Now, granted, third base eligibility means doesn't really matter because third base is not great other than the top four or five guys, right? So trying to find a third baseman that you can plug in there and say, hey, I hope he does well this week. Well, Mikel Garcia is certainly beyond replacement level in that fashion, even if he was as bad as he was last year. But this year, batting .319, he's been outstanding. A contact-first guy mostly. The barrel rate jumped from 4.2% last year, and it is up. The barrel rate was way down at 4.2% last year. It's up to nearly 7%, 6.7% barrel rate in 2025. Huge improvement there, right? You know, his exit, you know, his average exit velocity is up. His hard hit rate is up to 53.1%. Market improvement. Ideal contact rate up nearly 9% from 34.9% to 43.7%. That's massive improvement. All right. And we're seeing it in the slugging numbers. He slugged .332 in 2024. He's slugging a career high .486. Now, granted, only 150 plate appearances, but I think it's sustainable. Like the walk rate is up, the strikeout percentage is down, the zone contact rate has improved slightly. You know, it's an 18.2 home run to fly ball. Is that sustainable? Well, maybe. It's higher than his career average, but he's looked really, really good. And, you know, he's still putting the ball on the ground more than we'd like him to at 52.9%. But with his speed, that's not terrible, right? Like, he can still leg out some of those hits. Now, speaking of his speed, that's the one thing where he hasn't really done as much as we'd hoped. Now, granted, he still has 10 stolen bases. Don't get me wrong. Nothing to sneeze at. But he's been caught 5 times, which is kind of wild because he stole 37 bases and was caught just 2 times last year. So with an increase in speed, we're seeing a little bit, or I'm sorry, with an increase in power, we're seeing a little bit of decrease in speed. But I'll take the trade-off. Garcia has been outstanding so far, and I wouldn't be surprised to see him continue climbing Scott's ranks. And the last riser we talk about this week is Andy Pages. Like I mentioned before, he's in Tier 10, 109 this week, up 26 spots from the week before. And really, as we pointed out earlier, with Teoscar Hernandez being out, Pages is moving up the Dodgers' order. He's batted 2nd, 4th, 6th, 5th, 4th, and 6th in his last 6 games. That's 3 games in the top half of the lineup, batting behind guys like Freddie Freeman and Mookie Betts, who are on base a lot. Oh, and by the way, Shohei Ohtani, did I not mention him? Those 3 guys are on base a huge amount, so the RBI opportunities are much more... The RBI opportunities are much more prevalent, okay, batting in that part of the order as opposed to the lower third where he's surrounded by Chris Taylor and Kike Hernandez and Austin Barnes. So I love Pages if he's batting in that upper echelon of the order. If he's batting ahead of Max Muncy, he's doing things, all right? As I said before in the podcast, 9 for 27, a .333 batting average this week, 2 doubles, a triple, 5 RBI, 5 runs scored, and just a little cherry on top, a stolen base. Have a week, buddy. I mean, Teoscar's out. Altman's not good. And Conforto's off to a slow start. So, I mean, it's not like anybody else is going to be playing outfield. Mookie Betts isn't going back out there. They're not going to trot Shohei out to the corner outfield spots. So, it's Pages' job to lose. And if he can continue to stay in that top half of the Dodgers lineup, he's going to be a massive fantasy windfall for managers who picked him up recently. And anybody who could potentially buy low before we see maybe a breakout here. We'll be back as I wrap up with Scott's fallers from the week. We'll talk about some guys who have dropped in the rankings and for different reasons. We'll be back after this break. We're back with Hacks and Jacks. Brett Ford here at Fade That Man on social media. Scott Chu usually joins me. Unfortunately, he's under the weather. He's If The Chu Fits on socials. Make sure you give him a follow, especially. You can follow me too. I'm more of a comic relief and maybe some sarcastic remarks about how poorly the Orioles have started this year. Scott does the yeoman's work on social media, on Reddit. He does his AMAs. He's outstanding, answering nearly every question that gets asked on there. Scott's going to answer it. And he's doing better on Twitter, too. He got called out a couple weeks ago for not using Twitter as much. He's done significantly more on that social media recently. So make sure you give him a follow if you haven't already. We'll talk about some fallers in Scott Chu's top 150 hitters list. And we'll get started with Athletics outfielder Lawrence Butler. Butler, a guy that in draft season was labeled as a breakout. He was drafted really in the top 40 or 50 overall, depending on your format. But he's kind of not lived up to expectations here early in the season. And he's fallen to tier 6, number 59 overall. He's down 16 spots this week. He got the day off on Sunday versus a left-handed pitcher, but prior to that, he's batted 6th, 7th, and 6th in the previous 3 games. Now, that's a problem, okay? He was penciled into the leadoff spot for the Athletics, which, especially in points format, was very important, okay? Leadoff hitters get approximately 750 to 760 plate appearances per year on average. You drop down to 6th in the lineup, you're looking to 100 less plate appearances on average. You drop down to 7th, you're looking at 120 fewer plate appearances. All right, so that's a massive, massive drop off for Lawrence Butler if he's batting in that lower third of the Athletics lineup. Jacob Wilson, the Athletics infielder, has been outstanding. He's earned that leadoff spot. And, Butler's got to do more to get back up there in that lineup. Not to mention, you look under the hood and his line drive percentage is down from 24.1% to 19.8%. The pop-up percentage is up from 5.9 to 10.8. That's nearly double the percentage of infield pop-ups. So combine, the unfavorable metrics to the reduction in the order, a reduction in plate appearances, and it's a recipe for disaster. It is not looking good for Lawrence Butler. Hopefully he can turn things around. He's an outstanding athlete. He's got 6 steals, 6 home runs already this season. But fantasy managers are going to be looking for more with the draft capital they paid for Lawrence Butler. We move on to the Houston Astros infielder, first baseman Christian Walker. He's moved down 28 spots this week. That drops him to tier 9, 86th overall. And as Scott highlights, Walker's main problem this year, he's not hitting the ball in the air. You know, he's got those Crawford boxes in Houston now, and he's just not utilizing them, right? You know, you can bring those Crawford boxes in as far as you want, but the wall's still 30 feet high. You got to hit the ball in the air to get it over the wall for a home run. All right. I know that's not breaking news. Like, that's not great fantasy analysis, but Walker's not doing it. He's got a career high 46.4 ground ball rate. The strikeout rate is up to 27.9%. That's a career high. The walk rate is down from 10% last year to 7% this year. So all of that is kind of a perfect storm for just bad hitting. And not to mention, there's been a lot of good first basemen this year. We talked about Soderstrom and Torkelson and Ben Rice. And, you know, all three of those guys have passed Christian Walker in the rankings by a significant amount. So unless Walker can start, you know, changing his launch angle, changing his attack, he's going to continue to fall in the rankings because ground balls are just not getting it done for the Houston Astros first baseman. We'll move on to the Texas outfield. Adelis Garcia moves down 29 spots. He drops to tier 10, 114th overall. And the problem for Garcia is almost the exact opposite of what Christian Walker is facing. Garcia's hitting too many fly balls. You know, the fly balls are great if you're hitting home runs, but if they're not home runs, they're outs. All right, Scott has said that several times on several different podcasts. If you're hitting fly balls and you're not hitting them over the fence, they're probably outs. And that's the case for Adelis Garcia. He's up to 40% fly ball rate, and that's reduced his line drive rate, right? The home run to fly ball rate, by the way, is less than half of what it was last season. He's reduced from 25% to 12% in his home run to fly ball. So if you're hitting fly balls and you're not hitting home runs, they're outs, okay? He's got a sub-80 zone contact rate. You know, it's never been good. He's swung and missed a lot throughout his career. Now, granted, the 23% K rate is not that bad, all things considered, but when you reduce your walk rate down to 5.3%, you're hitting all fly balls and you're not hitting home runs. It's a tough scene. And his BABIP is a career low 250 as well. So Garcia, maybe Brett Boone can get in there and work with the Texas Rangers slugger and turn things around for him. But as of right now, it's not looking great for Garcia, who was a streaky power hitter to begin with. Scott talks about streaky power hitters all the time. Is, you know, when they're hot, they're hot. But when they're not, you should probably find a replacement. And the last bat we'll talk about today, Michael Busch, Chicago Cubs first baseman. He's down to tier 12. He's down 41 spots. I think that's a high or the most anyone fell this week. He's down to 137. And this is one I might need to push back. I kind of wish Scott was on the pod to discuss this one just because the metrics under the hood are not that bad. Busch is a streaky power hitter. He's just one of those guys. And the past 2 weeks prior to this week were pretty rough sledding, right? It was ugly. But this weekend he's shown signs of maybe turning things back around. The contact metrics are okay. The line drive rate is pretty good. And some even point to positive regression. The only thing that really scares me off Michael Busch is that, you know, his X average is 35 points less than his batting average. So he's batting like 262 and his X, you know, expected batting average is more like 225. So that's a little bit of a scary drop off. And maybe that's what Scott's looking at and seeing. But I would love to discuss this with him just to get his take, because I have no problem admitting that Scott is way smarter than me when it comes to analyzing you know, fantasy baseball hitters and just baseball hitters in general. So when he says something like this, when he has Michael Busch falling off an absolute cliff, that's a red flag for me, especially with a guy that you dive into the numbers and you don't necessarily see it on the surface. You know, I want to hear what Scott has to say about Michael Busch, and hopefully we get that, whether it's on social media or whether it's on the podcast next week. Well, that wraps it up for Hacks and Jacks this week. Thanks for tuning in. We really appreciate you guys stepping up and listening. I'm Brett Ford. You can find me at Fade That Man on social media. Next week, Scott will be back with his most recent update on the hitter list. But for now, enjoy your Mother's Day. You know, make sure you called your mom. If you didn't call your mom today, call your mom after listening to this podcast and just let her know how much you appreciate her. I know I appreciate my mom and all the wonderful moms in my life, all the wonderful women who helped make me the man I am today. Love you all and hope you had a great Mother's Day. Thanks for tuning in. We'll catch you next week.